You are listening to The Gaggle. The Gaggle podcast is an interview program that focuses on politics, media, and culture. The goal of the program is to emphasize the human aspects of people's everyday lives, discuss what makes people want to get up in the morning and go to work, examine individuals' personal drive, and look at how successful leaders have arrived where they are today. This is The Gaggle.
Daniel Lipman, who is a co-author of Political Playbook and a reporter for Politico. Daniel, very pleased to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Daniel, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about how you got into what you are doing right now. Originally, I believe you were sending reporters edits or reading a lot of articles and finding some factual errors. Can you talk a little bit about what you were doing and how it got and translated into what you are doing today?
Sure. So I actually I grew up in the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts, and when I went to Hotchkiss, I would go on the White House's website during the Bush administration, and I would find there was this Q&A called Ask the White House, where they'd have cabinet officials answer questions from regular Americans. And so I asked a bunch of these questions when I was 14 and 15 years old, and that first led to a profile in the New Yorker and the Talk of the Town section, just noting that there was this kid who engaged with top White House officials, and asked them questions about current news and what was going on, and probed them about, Bush administration policies. So what happened was I was very interested in the news, and so I'd read a lot of stories in the paper and online and, the wire services, and I would notice a bunch of typos and factual things that were not accurate. And that led me to email the reporters themselves and point them out and get them fixed if they were still able to. And I did that, hundreds of times, probably thousands of times over high school and college, and that Politico, I actually did that to my current employer when I was just a student, and they profiled me in my sophomore year of college, and that led to just me getting to meet a lot of people in D.C. and journalists and getting tours of the AP Bureau in D.C. and meeting, New York Times reporters, and so that helped me get internships and help launch me as a journalist.
And did Politico reach out and ask you immediately to help out with the playbook, or was that something that happened later down the line?
So what happened was after I graduated, I interned at the Wall Street Journal and Huffington Post and went to Turkey to cover the Syrian war on the border area for a week. And in November 2013, Mike Allen, my boss and my co-author in the playbook, he emailed me, and we had breakfast when I came back to D.C., and then they tapped me. So I got hired full-time at Politico 2 years after graduating from college. So it was not – there was a time of when I was kind of struggling to see where I would land, and it wasn't fun, but it I guess you could say it built character a little bit because, it wasn't just handed to me on a plate.
Now, you said you went to the Syrian border for a week to report?
Yes. So when I was a freelance journalist, I had a lot of free time, and so and I was always interested in Middle Eastern news and what was going on in the Syrian conflict. So I was going to meet a friend already in London and visit some reporters there. And so I thought, why not just take a $150 flight from London to Istanbul and then hop another flight to Eastern Turkey. And so that was amazing to see history kind of unfold in front of your eyes, and I wrote pieces for CNN.com and Huffington Post and another publication about refugees and rebels and injured civilians, and so it kind of opened, it illustrated how the budget battles in D.C. were kind of, they felt a little minuscule compared to the actual history involving millions of people in Syria.
If one day down the road you had to do or wanted to do a different type of journalism, would you rather do something like you did in Syria or something like you're doing now?
I would. I love D.C. reporting and covering politics, but I do want to do foreign reporting eventually, at least fly-ins or just to experience that more into it. You viscerally feel being a journalist much more when you're not surrounded by lots of journalists in the Beltway, and so that's and there's always going to be conflicts, and so that would be, it's an important topic and it's exciting and it's worthwhile, and so I don't think I'm going to do a career switch to that, but I do, that is kind of one of my goals eventually, to at least do some of that, but I expect to be in D.C. for a long time.
Now, Mike Allen's one of the busiest people in D.C., and I assume you are too. What can you say about it has been like working with Mike?
It's been the best experience of my life. I've gotten so many tips on how to become a better journalist and person and colleague and reporter and writer from him, and being in the trenches with him writing Playbook has been awesome. And he's just one of a kind person who I am really lucky that he picked me to help him on Playbook, and it's kind of a dream working for a person who's does the journalism that he does and has really built helped build Politico.
What do you? I notice in Playbook every day. It says spotted, and you can send some spottings and sightings to you. What does that say about D.C. culture? What have you noticed about D.C. culture since being there? What do you think about D.C. culture overall?
I guess what I think about D.C. culture overall is I encourage everyone to read This Town and to see how insular D.C. can be. And in terms of the spottings, it's just a fun feature we like to do to kind of make people feel like it's a community, and to and almost to show that we have readers everywhere. And we had a fun spotted today, which was Cheryl Mills and Doug Band, the two Clinton world people. They were huddled together at a restaurant in formal evening wear in Laguna Beach at a hotel, and so. That is kind of, it shows that politicians and staffers are people too, and it kind of lifts the veil of D.C. And in terms of D.C. culture, it's a combination of good and bad. Obviously, there's a lot of, K Street is thriving, and lobbying and influence and money in politics has never been stronger, it seems. But there's a lot of good people in D.C., and they, and in terms of interest groups, there's, it is a democracy after all, and we can all criticize the amount of money and influence, but people, there is a right for people to advocate for interests and for people and for companies. And it can be swayed in terms of there's not many interest groups just representing, poor Americans or middle-class Americans. It's very more specific. But and so it's kind of frustrating in terms of to see how much money there is in Washington. It's kind of a booming city always. There's construction cranes everywhere. But that's kind of what I would say. So.
Have you seen anything, without naming names or particular circumstances, that has really excited you since you've been there, or anything that has really frustrated or upset you since being there, like at an event or an example, maybe without going into specifics?
In terms of excited me, just to meet people I cover I got into journalism to hold people's feet to the fire and to hold government and powerful individuals and officials accountable, and and you do that as much as you can. So, you know, one funny example today was we had a the lead item of Playbook was about this Washington Post reporter, Wesley Lowery, who was overheard bragging that he was going to get a Pulitzer Prize at a party this weekend. So we put that as a lead of Playbook almost to it was a fun story, and it told readers what they didn't know, that the Post and New York Times were going to win Pulitzers, and I guess it served the purpose of, people shouldn't blab about their awards before they get them, and so that's kind of poor form and not the best behavior, and so in small ways and big ways, and one exciting project I did a couple weeks ago, too, was to watch 4 hours of 4.5 hours of Donald Trump rallies and speeches and counting up all the lies and misstatements and untruths that he said. And we came up with over 60. And that was one every 5 minutes. And that, I guess, in terms of your question about exciting moments, the president, President Obama, spoke about that article maybe a week after it was published. And so that was a surreal experience hearing the president mention our story, I'll never forget that.
Can you talk a little bit about the process of how Playbook is made? Like, what time do you start writing it, at night or in the afternoon, and how does it come together?
Sure. So I start at maybe 3 or 4 p.m., where I start scanning different news websites, going to a list of maybe 25 sites, and opening up any interesting articles that I think might be good for Playbook or interesting or something that tells me something new. Once I've done that and I feel comfortable with the many links in my many browser windows, I just cull through them and write items and then go through my email, because a lot of people email us tips with press releases or stories or birthdays. And then when I'm done writing, I compile it into a Word document that would be good as a Playbook document, and then I send it to my boss when I'm done. So that's probably past midnight, and then he picks up the baton at about 3 a.m. and then does his own items for 3 to 4 or 5 hours and edits mine down. And so it's kind of a collaboration between us.
And that's Mike
Allen, yeah.
Yeah.
So only two people on a newsletter that's probably 3,000 words every day. So it's no walk in the park, but it's the best life and job I've ever had.
Do you have any idea how many people read it? Or are you allowed to share that information?
So we have over 100,000 subscribers.
Wow.
And so including, George W. Bush reads this and Vice President Biden, I've heard, and a bunch of senators and CEOs, and not everyone opens it every day, but it's aimed for an elite audience, but one that we have lots of readers who are not part of the D.C. chattering class and who just want to know what's going on in D.C. A lot of political obsessives out in America and abroad, and so we write for both audiences.
Do you think that stories have to be packaged down because of social media, they have to be packaged down to smaller bites now, and Playbook makes it easier to understand stories? For example, The Skin as an example of that, or just Twitter and Politico?
What I would say to that is that a lot of news stories, there's often one or two or three very interesting new quotes or bites or statistics, something you would tell a friend at a party, and our goal is to find that and to compile it and curate it and to find our own scoops too, and add context and make it look presentable. And so social media has kind of amplified that, where that's the type of thing that you would tweet out. Like the most interesting thing from your story that you as a reporter would write, then that is what is tweeted and shared. That goes viral more often than just, this happened today, and let's have every reporter and covering the Bernie campaign or the Hillary campaign just write what they said today, because that's an old model that's out the door in terms of value to readers. The just down the line, this is what happened. So at Politico, we try to go beyond that and have exclusive stories and stories that provide lots of context and break news.
How do you think media has changed in the past 5 years, let's say? Or do you think it hasn't?
I think that it's going to change even more in the next next 5, 10, 15 years in terms of, unfortunately, a lot of, I'm a huge fan of newspapers, but for local papers, I think the wave hasn't completely hit yet where people are, there's going to be more of them just shut down, I think, because of the advertising revenue. They're not able to support themselves through online ads, and not as many people are willing to buy online subscriptions like Politico Pro or Wall Street Journal Digital Access. And so that is worrying. We're trying to go, we've moved into a bunch of states like California, Florida, Massachusetts, Illinois, New York, New Jersey to shore up state house coverage, which is really lacking, and that's bad for democracy. And journalism is just becoming much more mobile, and Twitter and Facebook is also trying to host a lot of articles on their own in their own walled garden, which will make it harder for media companies to get the advertising revenue that would come if people go to their own sites. And so journalists and people who work in the business of journalism and publishing, they have to figure that out, or some of the social networks will kind of their interest is in their profits and in keeping their company alive and growing, and it's not necessarily Facebook is not, they don't wake up and think, how do I save every news server that partners with us? They think, how do we grow Facebook and make a lot of money? And so that's definitely a worry, but you have to work with Facebook because they have such a huge audience, and you can't ignore where people want to get their news, which is half the time or a lot of the time through social media.
So my final question for you is, I would say that a lot of the way that you've gotten where you are is hard work. I mean, you started clearly sending typos to journalists, and it took you several years, and now you're doing something that you really love passionately. What advice would you have for people who really want to do what their passion is?
It's to, I guess my parents taught me to pursue, me and my sisters to pursue what we were interested in, and they didn't, pressure us to go into my dad's field. My dad's a doctor, or my mom, she's had a variety of different jobs and careers. And so it's just learning what you're interested in, how you want to spend your time in your life. And so I was already sending links to people when I was 14 and not getting paid, and now I get to, co-write a newsletter that I can kind of do that as my career and for now and my job. And so it's just not being afraid to do what you really want to do, because you spend so much time at work that you should choose happiness in that department, because if you're happy at work, then you'll be happy. You're much more likely to be happy in the rest of your life, and you'll be good at what you are interested in and what you like, and often. And so, I was lucky that I had this passion for news and journalism and politics pretty early on. I don't know where I got it, but it's just something in my brain kind of clicks when I am writing a story or a newsletter, find that information. And so that's kind of what the advice I would give.